such a good thing to have friends, even one good friend. And that's one of the things those two proverbs were saying. Kinsfolk or friends, a real gift, especially in adversity. And it's good not to fall out with friends. And Job, the main character of our autumn preaching series, the book named after him, the book of Job, this autumn, Job had three friends who had gone the extra mile to be with him when his life had gone badly wrong, who stayed alongside him while he tried to come to terms with it all. That's what friends do. Unfortunately, another thing which friends do is to say what they really think, often ending up in disagreement, even argument. And that is also what Job's friends did. They shared their thoughts, quite definitely. And their thoughts included bad thinking, bad theology, wrong ideas about God and how he works. So that their words didn't comfort Job. They made things worse for him. So we'll pick up in this section, which is the second cycle of Job's comforters. Three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, they all have a go at him first time round, and then they start again. They start again in chapter 15, and so we're picking up at the beginning of chapter 16, and just picking up some encouragement that how we might be better friends in these sort of situations first, before then looking at chapter 19. So chapter 16 first, page 512 in the Church Bible, it's probably something similar if you brought your own Bible. His response to Eliphaz's second speech, then Job answered, "I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all." Miserable comforters. It's actually an oxymoron. Comforters don't bring misery. But these ones did. More misery than Job had to start with. And they wouldn't shut up. Verse 3. "Have windy words no limit? Or what provokes you that you keep on talking?" Now, we need to have sympathy with everyone. We know it's difficult when we're with somebody who's going through it. And maybe there are long silences as the conversation dies. Or the subject matter brings a dampener on things. And I know the temptation, especially for the one who's coping better in the circumstances, is to fill the silences with words. But if the words are not helpful words, what's wrong with silences shared between friends? Pondering the ironies of life, letting your thoughts go a bit. It's okay. It's good, part of friendship, and it's certainly better than saying things which make things worse, however well meant. And it's difficult too when we hear a friend or family member telling us things that we don't want to hear, but we need to hear things. Good listening needs to hear everything. Job complained that his comforters shook their heads when he talked. Can you see? Verse 4. "I also could talk as you do," he says, "if you were in my place. I could join words together against you and shake my head at you." It's not good listening. And in verse 5, Job is basically saying, "This could go so much better. I could encourage you with my mouth, and the solace of my lips would assuage your pain." And so the encouragement of Job there in verse 5, and let's encourage one another to try to be a good friend. Let's commit ourselves this week to be a good friend to someone in distress. And it could be easy, as Job reminds us. It could be hard, surprisingly hard. But it's worth persevering. And I guess, however miserable comforters they were, Job's friends in one way did at least persevere. They kept trying. They came back for the second cycle, and they came back for a third cycle, you'll see. Let's give them credit for that. And let's try hard ourselves to be a good friend. Sometimes people say to me, I don't think I've really got any friends. And I encourage them to be a good friend, and then maybe you might have a good friend as well. So there's just an introduction in terms of the context of the friendship and how it was going. Not well, but at least they were hanging in there together at this point. And now let's go to one of the greatest chapters of this book. Indeed, probably one of the greatest chapters in the Bible. Indeed, when the writer of the words for Handel's Messiah wrote out all the Bible verses that they wanted to go in Handel's Messiah before Handel did the tunes, this was one of the key verses in this chapter. You'll see when we come to it. So, chapter 19. Now Bildad, the second comforter, has said his piece, and Job is answering him. And the theme is similar. And in chapter 19, we see some of the depth of the anguish of Job. Because 19 is basically an outpouring of anguish. And the truth is, it's okay for us to do that with God. God can take it, and it's important to do that with God. But that's not all this chapter is. It's not just an outpouring of anguish. There's also honest perseverance, real conviction, and enough confident faith to make all the difference. And as I read through it, I could also see it's a picture of loneliness. Don't know how much you know loneliness, but I recognized it in this chapter. It's a picture of loneliness because all of his friends and acquaintances have turned on him. Even the ones who are still talking to him. And that's often more lonely, isn't it? You're still surrounded by people, but you're feeling lonely. But he manages to avoid dwelling on self-pity. He's just very confused. Why? Why? And yet, he also trusts for the future. That's chapter 19. Let's go through it quickly together. Are you on page 514 in the church Bibles? Then Job answered, "How long will you torment me and break me in pieces with words?" He's feeling broken by his friends. The words of his friends are like torment, so destructive. I think their words are cruel. And they say them over and over. And they seem to have no shame. "These 10 times you have cast reproach upon me, again and again. Are you not ashamed to wrong me?" Don't think they are. And then he says, it's obviously that you think you're better than me. "If indeed you magnify yourselves against me," beginning of verse 5. But Job knows deep inside that all this is the strange result of God's work. "If indeed you magnify yourselves against me and make my humiliation an argument against me, know then that God has put me in the wrong and closed his net around me." And he feels so alone. And he knows it's unfair. His loneliness comes out quite clearly in verse 7. "Even when I cry out violence, I'm not answered." It's a picture like somebody in the street. They're attacked suddenly by a stranger. And they cry out. violence, or they cry out help or whatever, and it's like everyone just continues walking past. Not only is that a dreadful moment, in many other ways, it's also a very, very lonely moment. And for Job, once, not so long ago, he was getting along so well. Now, he's a broken man. And he knows God has broken him. Verse 10 and following. He breaks me down on every side and I am gone. He has uprooted my hope like a tree. He has kindled his wrath against me and counts me as his adversary. His troops come on together. They have thrown up siege works against me and encamp around my tent. I'm somebody that does a bit of camping now and then, and so the picture there is quite vivid for me. It's like you go camping, and you're in a beautiful place, and you spend the evening in the beautiful place. You go into your tent and have a night's sleep, but your sleep's interrupted quite early in the morning by all this noise going on outside, all these machines, all these people shouting. And you leave it for a bit, and you go to the door and unzip it, poke your head out to find the whole might of the American army pointing everything at you. That's what it felt like. Can you see the picture? His troops come on together. They've thrown siege works against me and encamp around my tent. Everyone seems to be against me. And he goes on to describe it. It's reasonably self-explanatory when you go through it. 13 and following. He has put my family far from me. My acquaintances are wholly estranged from me. My relatives and my close friends have failed me. The guests in my house have forgotten me. My serving girls count me as a stranger. I've become an alien in their eyes. I call to my servant, but he gives me no answer. I must myself plead with him. My breath is repulsive to my wife. I am loathsome to my own family. Even young children despise me. When I rise, they talk against me. All my intimate friends abhor me. And those whom I loved have turned against me. Used to go to IKEA more than I go now. And there used to be this machine that tested the furniture. It wasn't exactly a sort of boxing glove on a machine, but it was something like that. And there'd be maybe a chair or something that they wanted to prove was up to the test. And so this machine would pound it again and again, and you'd come back on your way out, and the machine would still be pounding it day after day. It'd pound it just to prove. It was a tester machine. And Job is feeling like the chair that thought it was comfortable, then gets chosen to be the one who is bashed by a tester machine again and again. And his health is suffering. Verse 20. His friends ought to have pity on him. 21, he cries out for that pity, but they just don't get it, and they won't give it. They've ended up taking sides against him, like all the others, including God, it seems. And so he is so confused in his anguish. I don't blame him, do you? One of the lessons for us is we're allowed to be confused in our anguish. We're allowed to speak that out to the Lord. Why? Why do you, like God, pursue me, never satisfied with my flesh, he says to his friends. It's not only his flesh, but now his spirit is feeling weak. But even though his spirit is weak, he's not bowed. And this is the marvelous part of this chapter. He is somebody who's hung on to his integrity. and his conscience is clear, and he lifts his head up high, even as he's bowed down by the way that he's experienced his life in recent times. He holds his head up high, and his conscience reminds him that he is blameless. His humanity really comes out in this chapter. Now, he doesn't claim to be perfect. We saw that in verse 4, where he said, "And even if it is true that I have erred, my error remains with me." He's basically saying, "Well, I do things wrong, that is true, but not, I haven't done things wrong such that you say all this stuff, take it out on me like this." So he's not perfect, doesn't claim that. His conscience is clear that the accusations against him are wrong. And so he does have confidence, even in the midst of all this rubbish. Because, well, why does he have confidence? He has confidence because in the end, he knows he will be vindicated. And his first way of saying that is this. He said, "Well, I'd be very happy for all this to be written down for posterity. I'm not ashamed." Can you see in verse 23? "Oh, that my words were written down. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book. I'm happy. Oh, that with an iron pen and with lead." Don't need to use pencil that needs rubbing out. "I can hold my head up high. They were engraved on a rock forever." Actually, it's one of the ironies of these verses that these words have been recorded for posterity, for everyone, forever. Especially these words which are coming up, these words of great faith and hope in the midst of this great trouble. When everyone seems to have turned their back, when Job has suffered one blow after another, and even his nearest and dearest are unwilling to help, when he's been put through the ringer like that again and again and again, still he has true faith. And this is what it looks like. Still he has true faith and trust. And this is what it sounds like. And he speaks out his confusion and pain and loneliness, and it's okay to. And he is ruffled and riled and deeply affected, and that is natural and right, and it's okay to say it. And he's frustrated with his friends. They should be able to take it. And with God, he can take it. Because there's no way that this is fair and just. And yet good things come from this as well. It seems that all of this loneliness and suffering has helped him. For one, it's made him clearer about trusting God's future hope. And isn't it true? If everyone else lets us down, it does often help us trust God's ways. After all, there's nothing else left for us to trust. Suffering does that. It's part of the value of suffering. It's why it's a good thing, not just a bad thing. It shows us the perils of self-confidence, the dangers of over-trusting those around us, and throws us towards trusting God, God's eternal promises, more clearly, more keenly. And so, suffering builds true faith. And what is it that Job says next? Like a towel break after another round in a boxing match, what is it that he says? "For I know that my Redeemer lives, and that at the last he will stand upon the earth." It says here, cue music. We haven't got any music, don't panic on the sound desk. But the music, which some of you would be aware of, because I gave you a clue earlier on, is Handel's Messiah. And there's this song in the middle. And you're there thinking, "Don't sing it, Rob." And it's all right, there's no danger of that. Where it goes, "I know that my Redeemer liveth. At the last he will stand upon the earth." those verses are at a key part in the oratorio that is such a favourite and such an encouragement to many. And what would the idea of a redeemer have meant to Job? Well, in the Old Testament, there's a strong picture of the kinsman redeemer. This is part of the system which God had given in order to help every one of his people. There would be, if someone reached the point of dire straits, a wider family member who would come along and look out for you when things reached rock bottom. Maybe buy you out of slavery should things get that bad. That was their job as a wider family member. Have you ever read the book of Ruth in the Old Testament? And you might remember that famine and the early death of the three men in the family meant that Ruth, young widow, was reduced to begging for any leftovers of grain as a hired harvester at the back of the queue. Until she found her kinsman redeemer, Boaz, who rescued her and her mother-in-law from their dire straits. And so those widows received back their God-given inheritance and their future. So in that sort of spirit, Job is saying, my Redeemer lives. And so on the last day, there will be someone who will stand for me, vindicate me. So there is hope, real hope, true hope. That is real hope. Wouldn't you like to know that hope, which is such good news, especially in the midst of the experience of the opposite? And when God brings justice at the last, Job is saying, he has confidence that he will be vindicated. Wouldn't you like to know that confidence, even though you might feel like that chair with the machine in IKEA? Because even though everyone may have turned against Job, his Redeemer lives, will stand up for him. It's God's way. And Job's hanging on to it. And actually, we, Christians, should know even better than Job that this is God's way. Because for us who live this side of Jesus' first coming, we know that Jesus is the Redeemer, our Redeemer. He's the one who pleads for us on the heavenly throne, even if all others desert us. He stands with us in our suffering and testing, and he knows just what it's about. Because he was bruised and battered for no good reason of his fault, but to pay the price for the redemption. He's the Redeemer of others who put their trust and hope in him. His death on the cross seemed so hopeless. It seemed like the end of the road. And yet, Jesus did not give up. And on the third day, he lives. My Redeemer lives. And so, even in the midst of the darkest times, there is hope. Hope for the last day. Sure hope. To finish by combining the idea of a friend and Jesus. What a friend we have in Jesus. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this chapter. Even though so much of it is painful to hear because it was painful for Job to experience, we thank you because it could be such a help in our pain or in helping others who are in pain. And because it is such a chapter of anguish then and darkness, the light shines out even more brightly as we are turned towards the Redeemer that you have provided. We thank you for Jesus and his friendship. Amen.